In the same way that the doctrines of men instituted by a quasi-secular institutionalized church inhibited the very objectives of the gospel from being brought about within the congregation of believers, the corruption of politicians and judges inhibited our constitutional form of government from bringing about the higher destiny of man in the American people. The system of checks and balances, which was instituted in the threefold division of power in the federal government, which, federal government, was restricted and limited to the protection of our nation and interstate commerce, was negated by a Supreme Court that failed to ensure and preserve the constitutional rights of the people. The almost total negation of the powers given to the states, along with the suppression of almost all of the all-pervading rights of the people, rendered the Field of Dreams factor and the potential of the laws sterile and politically castrated, resulting in not only the wholesale deprivation of the God-given rights of the people that our constitutional framers correctly portrayed as unalienable, but in the same way that the corruptions of the church deprive the congregation of believers of the very objectives of the gospel teachings. The corruption of our constitutional form of government has deprived the world and all of mankind from bringing about the very objectives of the life that man is living in this world as the prodigal sons and daughters of the Most High. While it is true that all men as the offspring of God are created equal, they are not at all the same. In order to understand why the framers of our constitutional form of government possessed a higher wisdom and knowledge than our modern-day intellectuals and philosophers, you would have to first understand what they accomplished in the previous lives that their soul had lived. Or, in the words of the Church Father Origen, every soul comes into this world strengthened by the victories or weakened by the defeats of its previous life. Origen. D. Principes. And the few who truly understand who these individuals who entered into this life as a group and who came together on the American continent to create a Field of Dreams environment of government that had the potential to raise up and alter the course of man's lives upon the face of the earth, remains totally unrealized among the majority of mankind who often choose to live in subjection to the forces of ignorance and despair. The harsh and often cruel reality of man's suffering is presented in an article by Walter E. Williams entitled America's Move Toward Tyranny, where he wrote, Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis warned, "The greatest dangers to liberty lurk in the insidious encroachment by men of zeal, well-meaning, but without understanding. The freedom of individuals from compulsion or coercion never was, and is not now, the normal state of human affairs. The normal state for the ordinary person is tyranny, arbitrary control, and abuse mainly by their own government." In failing to understand these simple words expressed by Walter Williams, the American people have not only negated the very Field of Dreams that should have been their birthright, but they are well on their way to restoring the normal human condition of tyranny, arbitrary control, and abuse mainly by their own government. In the words of Gerald Ford, a government big enough to give you everything you want is a government big enough to take from you everything you have. Presidential Address to a Joint Session of Congress, August 12, 1974. And those who understand human nature are cognizant of the fact that this is always the case that is. Those who forget history are doomed to repeat it. Why? Power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Great men are almost always bad men, even when they exercise influence and not authority. Still more when you superadd the tendency or certainty of corruption by full authority. There is no worse heresy than the fact that the office sanctifies the holder of it. See John Dalberg. In permitting government to overstep its constitutional boundaries, the American people have deprived themselves of their birthright that was the very objectives of the historical man Jesus, and foundationally established by the framers of our Constitution in their proclamation to the world that men possess unalienable God-given rights, and the primary objective of government is to affirm, support, and protect these rights that are inscribed in the very core spiritual DNA of creation. A Field of Dreams environment that had the potential to enable man to arise to his highest expression as the offspring of God. In the same way that from the single-cell embryo that is balanced and divided across the spectrum of opposite, male/female, polarities that interact in a functional harmony, and from this single cell, each complex organ and system is segregated from the rest and developed to its highest potential before it is evolved and prepared to harmoniously function as a single unit that is suitable to provide the child with the necessary environment to support the gift of human life, men of wisdom, who comprehend the laws and the true potential of man. Understand that the only valid expression of government is to assist and protect the same process of development in a nation that takes place in the formation of the body of the human child. That the American government, which has been permitted to overstep its constitutional limits, has sought to undermine and negate the laws, and philosophically and culturally homogenize and suppress the development of the necessary 12 spheres of mind from forming within the population of the people, thereby inhibiting the very pattern that lays the foundation for the field of dreams to become a reality, from producing the higher elevated life that is the potential of mankind if he is able to achieve the necessary subsequent stages of birth that restores the kingdom within him. The spiritual life, returning to the near-death experience, NDE, which was noted and explored prior to the foregoing examination of deism and the constitutional protection of the practice of religion. While the pseudo-intellectuals who support Darwinism present their theory of an oxygen-starved brain, the government educational systems permit them to promote this theory to the exclusion of those who have actually had an NDE, because their oxygen-starved brain theory is necessary to support the whole structure of Darwinism in the classroom. Yet, in their refusal to rationally examine the facts, they are in effect slamming the door to developing the mind beyond organic limitations, thereby depriving the students of any real opportunity to advance and possess the unbounded intellectual knowledge and reason which our constitutional forefathers portrayed as opening the door to. From the above deist perspective, a religious truth, which can be determined using reason and observation of the natural world. If what the deists proposed is true, a man has the power to develop his mind to the point where he can overcome the ignorance associated with the undeveloped organic mind of man, then the suppression and censorship by our modern government is one of the cruelest acts known to man. What facts are being suppressed? In addition to the more common near-death experiences, where one sees their departed relatives and friends in an afterlife, there have been a number of people who have had an NDE and recognized that while in that bodiless state, they knew what they portrayed as the secrets of creation, and once back in the body, they could only remember that when they were released from the body, they knew and understood with a clarity what they had never experienced before at any time in this life. Yet, they also recognized that once the body was resuscitated, and the mind became reconnected to the physical body and brain, they no longer possessed this higher knowledge and awareness, and they were only able to recall that while out of the body and detached from the brain, they knew many of the secrets of life that has perpetually plagued man throughout the ages he has walked the face of the earth. The primary objective of the gospel teachings of the way was to bring about those conditions and environment in the body that would permit the person to know and understand the higher truths that Paul warns are incomprehensible to organic man. See mystery of the gospel. In the same way that those who began to understand with a new and greater clarity when they were free of the body environment lost this knowledge once the body was resuscitated, and they were again linked to the physical. The whole application of the gospel teachings and the spiritual practice of religion is the preparation and eventual transformation of the physical body and organic consciousness to become a spiritualized environment and vehicle capable of bringing about the necessary subsequent stages of birth that Jesus said was necessary to enter the kingdom. Therefore, one of the primary objectives of living the spiritual life that Jesus taught was to bring this condition of enlightenment about while still in the body vessel. It is therefore important to recognize that those Christians who called themselves Orthodox, who very much lived in accord with the culture and thinking of their time frame, did not at all live the spiritual life that was embraced by the most immediate disciples and followers of Jesus and the teachings of the way. Therefore, in accord with Jesus' own witness and teachings, it was impossible for those who called themselves Orthodox Christians to possess the knowledge of the spiritual Christian who sought the higher reality of the soul and the gnosis of the kingdom. And in like manner, it was impossible for the Pharisees to possess this sacred knowledge, just as it is impossible for the vast majority of people in our modern time to possess this sacred knowledge, just as it is impossible for atheists and even those whom modern man calls authorities to possess this sacred knowledge. The dead know nothing. The Christians who call themselves Orthodox embraced the doctrine that so long as they had faith in the historical man Jesus, who the 4th century church recreated as God, see the 10 words, that they had fulfilled their obligations as believers. In fact, they condemned the spiritual Christians who were portrayed as Gnostics, because this group of believers understood that faith apart from actions is dead, see James 2:20, and that the works of the Spirit that is required is the very transformation of the physical body and organic consciousness that Paul wrote was a necessary foundation of faith, which is expressed in the words, put to death. Therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature, Col 3, 5 and IV, that those who called themselves Orthodox were incapable of understanding the higher reality of the soul and spiritual natures of man, is the blindness that Jesus portrayed as the carnal beam that was in their eyes. And just as important is the fact that Jesus portrayed the people of an organic mindset as being dead when he said, "Let the dead bury their own dead." Matt 8:22 NKJ. And in like manner, when Paul spoke of life and death in the warning for if ye live after the flesh, ye shall die. But if ye through the Spirit do mortify the deeds of the body, ye shall live. Rom 8:13 KJV. In these words, Paul was very much speaking in the present tense, which is the true meaning of Ek 9:5, that the dead know nothing. When the book of Genesis makes the profound statement that if the forbidden fruit of the tree of duality, aka tree of knowledge of good and evil, is eaten, that you will die, the reference is not to a physical death, but rather a death that Jesus portrayed as being cast into the outer darkness of mind and being. See outer darkness. And this is descriptive of the majority of lost prodigal sons and daughters who have come under the control of the citizen of the far country, which in many respects is parallel to the Platonic cave of illusions. See Plato's cave. Those who are portrayed as the dead who know nothing are being led by secular and sectarian leaders and counterfeit teachers who instruct the children into the way of death in our present-day culture. Thus, on this very subject and reality, the Gospel of Philip declares, "A nationalist does not die, for he has never lived so that he could die. Whoever has trusted the truth became alive, and this one is in danger of dying as a martyr, for he is alive since the day that the Christ came." Thus Desiderius Erasmus, in Praise of Folly, "It really makes little difference when such a man dies. He has never lived." A nationalist must be understood as a person who is biblical portrayed as of the nations, and who very much lives and thinks in accord with the ways of this world, that is, the far country in the parable of the prodigal son. The martyr is he who dies to the ways of this world, in order to seek the next stage of birth that enables him escape the outer darkness and enter the inner reality of the soul and the kingdom. That the people who are portrayed as being of the nations are dead and walk in accord and under the control of the beasts of their lower earthbound nature that Paul portrayed as the natural man, even when they are baptized and confirmed believers who have received the initial gifts of the Spirit, who remain incapable of perceiving and understanding the higher reality of the soul and the inner kingdom, see Mystery of the Gospel, is further presented in the Gospel of the Nazarenes in the words, "And after 7 days again, his disciples were within the upper room. Then came Jesus, the doors being shut, and stood in their midst and said, 'Peace be to you.' And he was known to them in the holy memorial. And he said to them, 'Love you one another and all the creatures of God. Yet, I say to you, not all are men who are in the form of man. Are they men or women in the image of God whose ways of violence, of oppression and wrong, who choose a lie rather than the truth? No, truly, till they are born again and receive the Spirit of love and wisdom within their hearts, then only are they sons and daughters of Israel. And being of Israel, they are children of God. And for this cause came I into the world, and for this I have suffered at the hands of sinners." Again, the reference that is being made to the next stage of birth cannot be brought about with a profession of words to the Jesus God of Constantine that is representative of the pagan idolatry of the church, but rather, the next stage of birth that can only be brought about through the process that Paul presents in the words, "Put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature," Col 3:5 NIV, which is the process where the dead begins to come alive, portrayed in the words, "Let the dead bury their own dead," Matt 8:22 NKJ. And in like manner, when Paul spoke of life, death, and the process of birth in the warning for if ye live after the flesh, ye shall die. But if ye through the Spirit do mortify the deeds of the body, ye shall live. Rom 8:13 KJV. The scriptures are a spiritual writing, allegorical in nature and written in the language of the soul, which means that death, from a spiritual perspective, has absolutely nothing to do with physical death, but rather the soul and spiritual death that envelops all the lost prodigal sons who dwell in either the prison or the outer darkness of the far country. When addressing the common belief with respect to the physical resurrection, which was embraced by the entry-level believers in the church, which is representative of the common belief among Christians today, the church father Origen correctly stated that this doctrine was preached in the churches for the simple-minded and for the ears of the common crowd who are led on to live better lives by their belief. See Origen. Contra Celsum. And that the resurrection of the dead is in reality the next stage of birth that brings about the end times within the seeker/disciple. where heaven and earth become unified and joined within the body and mind of the disciple as they become transformed into the final temple. Thus, on the resurrection, the Gospel of Philip warns, those who say that first they shall die and then they shall arise are confused. If they do not first receive the resurrection, while they live, they will not receive anything when they die. And unless you achieve the next stage of birth that is allegorically represented in the gospel account of the resurrection, then you are the dead that Jesus made reference to in the words, "Let the dead bury their own dead." And this is why Jesus warned those who would call themselves his followers and believers, "And he who does not take his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me. He who finds his life will lose it, and he who loses his life for my sake will find it." Matt 10:38-39 NKJ. The requirement that has been set forth is that ye shall therefore be holy, for I am holy. Lev 11:45 KJV. In the words of Gregory, Bishop of Nyssa, it is imperative on all those who have an equally earnest desire for the good as he has, to be followers by the path of an exact imitation of him who leads the way to salvation, and to carry into action what he has shown them. It is, in fact, impossible for persons to reach the same goal unless they travel by the same ways. And this is why the requirement was set forth by Jesus with respect to his disciples and followers. You, therefore, must be perfect, as your heavenly Father is perfect. Matt 5:48 RSV. The folly of the NDE critic. We can easily demonstrate the inability to comprehend even the most basic of man's higher spiritual realities when we examine the theory of the pseudo-scientific authorities who, for purely ideological and philosophical reasons, strive to explain away the near-death experience, NDE, as the illusions of an oxygen-starved dying brain attempting to totally ignore many important factors which they can't even begin to come to terms with. Why do the pseudo-intellectuals attempt to reject the validity of the NDEs that people have? Because if these near-death experiences are valid, then the whole foundation of modern junk science promoted by pseudo-intellectuals is a fraud built upon a bogus lie. While it is true that many of the NDEs that people experience are limited to the immediate area of the dead body, it is also true that there exists many other important accounts of NDEs that do not at all fit this mold and therefore cannot at all be dismissed as a dying oxygen-starved brain in the manner that the NDE critics attempt to do. And one of those important factors that the skeptic ignores is the accounts of the many people who experience an NDE, who find themselves floating through what we perceive to be concrete walls, where they then are able to both view and hear what transpires in this physical reality from a remote location that is far removed from their lifeless dead body. Unlike the person who finds themselves merely floating above their body, these people observe and witness events that are taking place in other rooms, and sometimes at great distances from their dead physical body. There is documented cases where, during an NDE, the person is able to report conversations between people they did not know was present outside where their body was being resuscitated. Conversations that took place in other rooms that were far removed from the body in need of resuscitation. If a person who has died in an accident or during an operation is able to accurately convey not only the people present, but also their conversations and the events that transpired at a location that is removed and not in the same room as their lifeless body, then what this person experienced while dead cannot be rationally portrayed as an oxygen-starved dying brain. Yet, not only does the pseudo-intellectuals who ignore the facts in order to promote their ideology fail to even acknowledge the many accounts where a dying individual found themselves floating through what we perceive as concrete walls to accurately repeat the events in a distant place or waiting room, but there have been cases where a person who had an NDE found themselves drawn to a remote place many miles from where their lifeless body was, and was able to repeat and convey to others the people and events that transpired at this remote location. And because they can't explain the facts that their philosophical ideology inhibits them from acknowledging, their reasoning is fraudulent and bogus, and their intellectualism is counterfeit. A rational mind would conclude that if there was any truth to the skeptic's theory that an NDE is the result of the illusions of an oxygen-starved dying brain, then the people would not at all be able to report conversations and events that transpired remotely from their body. That, in the manner of a typical true believer, no amount of proof or facts could cause these skeptics to examine their opinions from the perspective of the mounting evidence that proves them to be in error. Why? To simply acknowledge this one point would have the effect of forcing the atheist and skeptic to re-examine the whole framework of their thinking and beliefs. In fact, their whole Darwinist house of cards would come tumbling down before them, and that our educational system permits these pseudo-experts to promote their easily disproven opinions without being challenged, represents a virtual crime being perpetrated against young, innocent minds. That the government schools force children to be programmed into a model of thinking that is easily proven to be a bogus fraud. In addition to witnessing events and conversations that transpired at a remote location from the dying body, there have been numerous accounts where an encounter was made with a relative who the person experiencing the NDE did not know in that life. Quoting from one such account documented in Psychology Today, "I've just read Eben Alexander's recently published book Proof of Heaven, A Neurosurgeon's Journey into the Afterlife. Dr. Alexander tells a vivid story of nearly dying of meningitis, during which, he says, he experienced a full-blown near-death experience, NDE, in which he visited a divine realm filled with love and knowledge. I have no doubt that Alexander sincerely believes that he had the experience. A neurosurgeon who worked at Harvard Medical School isn't going to be a charlatan. He offers what is, within the story, evidence that it really happened. He met a woman whom he later found was his birth sister, now deceased." In an account carried on ABC News, Dr. Alexander presents his experiences. Deep in coma, his brain infected so badly only the most primitive parts were working. Alexander claimed he experienced something extraordinary, a journey to heaven, in every sense of the word. "That's what my experience showed me," Alexander said. "My first memories from when I was deep inside. I had no language. All my earthly memories were gone," he said. "I had no body awareness at all. I was just a speck of awareness in kind of a dark, murky environment, in roots or vessels or something. And I seemed to be there for a very long time, I would say years. I was rescued by this beautiful, spinning, white light that had a melody, an incredibly beautiful melody with it that opened up into a bright valley," he added. "An extremely verdant valley with blossoming flowers and a just incredible, rich, ultra-real world of indescribable complexity." Alexander said there was a young woman who soared across time and space with him on a butterfly wing and gave him a message to take back from heaven. "She looked at me. And this was with no words. But the concepts came straight into mind. You are love. You are cherished. There's nothing you have to fear. There's nothing you can do wrong," he said. "God was there as a vast presence of love," Alexander said. And Alexander understood God through an orb of brilliant light. "It was all of eternity and all of conscious existence," he said. "But it was this brilliant orb of light that was almost as necessary as a translator to bring in that message from the divine and the incredible." After he recovered, Alexander, who was adopted, was shown a picture by his biological family of a sister he had never met or seen before. He recognized the sister as the young woman from heaven. "I looked up at that picture on my dresser that I had just got, and I knew who my guardian angel was on the butterfly wing," he said. "It is the most profound experience I've ever had in this life." Of course, many would call Alexander's experience a hallucination, but not him. "I know this is not a hallucination. Not a dream. Not what we call a confabulation," Alexander said. "I know that it really occurred. And it occurred outside of my brain." Perhaps even more telling is the NDE account contained in the book Near Death Experiences, The Rest of the Story by PMH Atwater, page 37, where it is documented, 4-year-old Jimmy John drowned in his parents' backyard swimming pool. He was an only child. Mom was in her late 20s. Dad was in his early 30s. Emergency crews arrived. 15 minutes later, the boy breathed again. Mom was overcome with relief until Jimmy John blurted out for all to hear, "I met my little brother. He's over there, where I was. And he told me all about mommy having him pulled out of her tummy when she was 13. This was not a grieving mother. Her abortion had long been forgotten. While her two sons became the best of friends, she had a nervous breakdown and her husband left her." In yet another section of the foregoing book with respect to the accounts of children, from pages 55 to 56, it is concluded, "Over half of the children experiencers in my research could remember their birth. Whenever possible, I checked out those stories with parents, mostly mothers. I never found an error. 1/3 had pre-birth memory, most of those beginning at about 6 to 7 months in utero. Medically, it has been shown that the fetus at 26 weeks or 6 months gestation experiences many sensations, including pain. This medical discovery of fetal awareness directly applies to the majority of children in my research who reported the beginnings of their memory as a sole resident in human form while still inside the womb. Some had recall of earlier than month 6 in utero, even of their conception, and of actively taking part as a spirit in choosing their own DNA. Most of those who spoke of remembering their conception also said they floated in and out of their mother's womb until finally settling in when fetal formation was more complete, around the 7th or 8th month. It's scary what some children remember from their pre-birth experiences in the womb. Things like heated debates and arguments, conditions in the home, even how their mother felt about her own life and her thoughts. Emotionally charged issues are remembered readily, especially if the child's welfare is threatened, like the possibility of an abortion or because of an accident or assault on the mother, and a missing twin that extra, who was never born or died or was reabsorbed by the mother because of being damaged or malformed, that being can return in a near-death scenario. On occasion, the one who was aborted reappears. In an article entitled Valedictorian Speaks Out Against Schooling by Erica Goldson, she writes, "I contend that I am a human being, a thinker, an adventurer, not a worker. A worker is someone who is trapped within repetition, a slave of the system set up before him. But no, I have successfully shown that I was the best slave. I did what I was told to the extreme." And then Erica Goldson concludes, "I will never be able to turn back these 18 years. I can't run away to another country with an education system meant to enlighten rather than condition. This part of my life is over. And I want to make sure that no other child will have his or her potential suppressed by powers meant to exploit and control. We are human beings. We are thinkers, dreamers, explorers, artists, writers, engineers. We are anything we want to be, but only if we have an educational system that supports us rather than holds us down. A tree can grow, but only if its roots are given a healthy foundation. The fact that ideologues have a government-ordained license to promote one philosophical school of thought, while censoring all other positions, is a crime that is not only being perpetuated upon our children, but is unconstitutional. Yet, in the manner of what Erica Goldson portrays as slaves to the system that has been put into place by both sectarian and non-sectarian ideologues, we promote the spiritual death of our children even before they have had the opportunity to begin to truly live." Quoting Erica Goldson, H.L. Mencken wrote in the American Mercury for April 1924 that the aim of public education is not to fill the young of the species with knowledge and awaken their intelligence. Nothing could be further from the truth. The aim is simply to reduce as many individuals as possible to the same safe level, to breed and train a standardized citizenry, to put down dissent and originality. That is its aim in the United States. Because crucial facts and information is being censored and withheld from the developing minds of children, the necessary centers of mind that must be nourished with higher impressions that give birth to elevated and higher areas of reason and intellect, remain dormant and atrophied. And sadly, it becomes near impossible to free the mind of its initial programming at a more advanced age, when the patterns of thought has already been set and fossilized. And when you come to understand that all essential truths in this world are often paradoxical, immersed in a world of conflicting opinions and facts, then you can begin to understand that the acceptance of one truth to the rejection of its opposite is very much the eating of the forbidden fruit of the tree of duality that brings death. That is, "Let the dead bury their own dead," Matt 8:22 NKJ. In their elevated understanding of the laws, the deists see deism and the First Amendment understood that the people must possess the necessary freedom and liberty to form and live in groups where schools of thought, which is representative of each of the 12 spheres of mind, have the environment of freedom necessary to nurture and develop their philosophical ideas to their highest level of expression. Often, each of these philosophical schools of thought require the adherents to live in accord with certain standards and teachings separate and apart from the influences and coercion of other groups that embody a conflicting school of thought. Yet, with government institutionalized education where a lifestyle and ideology is promoted, while conflicting facts and philosophical schools of thought are suppressed and censored, the homogenization factor creates an environment of mental stagnation and spiritual death a death that destroys the life of the child before they even have the opportunity to truly begin to live. If anything, the near-death experience, ND, shatters the cultural paradigm of thought that enslaves mankind in a framework of fossilized thinking. and awakens them to the existence of a higher reality than what they have been programmed to even imagine. In the same way that Robert Jastrow, an astrophysicist who is quoted in the foregoing, portrays the flaws in the Big Bang Theory as the scientists' refusal to speculate beyond their predefined view of the world and the limitations of their man-made theories, that is. He is quoted as stating that, if a scientist really examines the implications, he would be traumatized. As usual, when the mind is faced with trauma, it reacts by ignoring the implications. In science, this is called refusing to speculate, or by trivializing the origin of the world by calling it the Big Bang, as if the universe were merely a firecracker. The pseudo-authorities who attempt to ignore the implications of those in an NDE who witness events and conversations distant from their lifeless body, as their own rejection of the facts that cause them to refuse to speculate. An oxygen-starved dying brain, which they promote as an explanation for the NDE portraying the dying process as a purely physical experience, confined to the consciousness of the dying body that is initiated by a lack of oxygen, ignore what they refuse to acknowledge. Why? Because they have been traumatized by the facts, and in view of the fact that the implications are a threat to everything they hold as truth, they simply refuse to even speculate. A dying oxygen-starved brain simply cannot transcend time and space, move through and beyond the barrier of physical walls, and witness and overhear events that is taking place far remotely from their dead and lifeless body. So, because their dying brain theory is itself gravely flawed, the skeptics simply ignore all the factual accounts and refuse to speculate beyond the very limited borders of their self-imposed beliefs. Why? In order to preserve their theory that man is nothing more than a mutated beast, and is accountable to nothing higher than the satisfaction of his carnal appetites.